As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Is off. The Rams get down so nobody score. And don't you worry, cause the Rams are rapping. When game time comes, we'll be back to zapping. We can't sing and our dance is not pretty, but we'll do our best for the team and the city. So get on your feet and clap your hands. Let's ram it right now with the LA Rams.
The only thing else I got to say is, how about them Cowboys?
How about them Cowboys indeed?
Back from the bye here on About Them Cowboys, we've got John on site at Jerry World, not Jerry World, I should say Jerryville, at the Star. Saad Youssef is joining us as well. And to host this thing, it's Kevin KT Fun Halloween Turner. What's up, KT?
Hello, Kent. Good to be back. You know, John is always such a voice of reason on this podcast, because every time I think about the NFL and how things are going, we try to like make some snap judgments on what the team is. And sure, the 49ers did smoke them. And then it was kind of an ugly game against the Chargers, but it was a win against what we think might end up being a good team. But who knows what the Chargers are going to end up doing. There's a lot of tension there with how their season is going. And then you see back-to-back losses by the 49ers after a Cowboys win, because the physicality of the Cowboys knocked the 49ers off of their axis. And then they've got Brock Purdy hurt now, looking like Sam Darnold might be the quarterback for them this weekend. And then you're reminded, this season's kind of long. And you never know. There are many paths to get to where we're going. And here we find ourselves at 4-2 off the bye week. And we record this 6 days shy of the trade deadline on Wednesday the 25th, if you're listening to this a few days later. How you feeling about things, John?
Pretty good, just from a stance of looking at the rest of the league over the bye week. And it's not just the Niners losing. It's the Niners, after beating the Cowboys 42-10, losing on back-to-back weeks against a Browns team that was starting P.J. Walker at quarterback, against a Vikings team that didn't have Justin Jefferson. So that was a head-scratcher. Then you have the absolute egg that the Lions laid against the Ravens, made the Ravens look like they might be the best team in football. So that was a head scratcher, considering that I feel like the top four teams in the NFC are the Cowboys, Niners, Eagles, and Lions. And then you have that Eagles game against the Dolphins, and the Eagles were able to hold that mighty Dolphins offense to, what was it, 244 yards, which is crazy. Before that game, the lowest anybody's held them this season is 389. So to 244. So those three results right there show you that however you were probably feeling, if you're a Cowboys fan, after that 42-10 loss, it's probably not as bad as you think. I will also say I still feel I'm in a pretty similar spot as I was before the Niners game, where I feel like it's Niners-Eagles are still the class of the NFC, and if they're healthy. And then I think the Cowboys and then Lions are like on that next tier. And then there's a pretty big drop off after that. And so the Cowboys can stay healthy. They're still in it in the NFC. Absolutely. We'll learn a lot more in 2 weeks against the Eagles, but there's enough there to where you get a win against the Rams this week. You go into the Eagles game, potentially have a chance to beat them, take over first place in the division. So, I mean, everything's still, you know, in front of you. I don't think there's a ton of hype going into this game, and I kind of get that.
Yeah, there's a lot to be made about a few things involving some comments Jerry's made and the trade deadline, and maybe we'll get to that here in a minute on the show. Let's first start from scratch. Where are we at on injuries? How are we looking? I mean, usually you want your bye week, to me, at least in my opinion, you want your bye week come around week 10, week 11, and you can kind of gear up for the playoffs. But, you know, it hits teams at different times, and it's just kind of random when it comes to that. Cowboys seem relatively healthy overall compared to some teams. I mean, the 49ers just got hit all at once with everything. You know, the Eagles have yet to really get hit too hard with a big injury bug or anything. But you know, every team fights through their battles there, and there's a little bit of, you know, randomness to it at times. A little early of a bye week, but the offense needed a reset. I think we agree on that. So how are you feeling about things health-wise?
I mean, pretty good, considering the fact that most of the time, like, for example, okay, going into last week's or 2 weeks ago's game, when we get the injury report, so here, this is the one at the end of the week. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15 names. 15 names on this bad boy, okay? Now, one of the names on there was Leighton Vander Esch. Since then, he has been moved to IR, so he will not be on that type of a list. So usually this part of the season, you're expecting somewhere between, I don't know, 5 to 10 seems like a good ballpark, and maybe 3 or 4 guys not practicing, another 2 or 3 limited, and then a couple guys that are still full even though they're on the report. The report today, one name, Wanye Thomas. That's it. Hamstring, wow. Full participant. So I don't think that you ask for much better than that. Again,
healing powers of the bye week.
Exactly. I'm not sitting here saying, like, when you say that, you know, everybody was out there. Obviously, Trayvon Diggs just had his surgery. Leighton Vander Esch on IR. We're not counting them and the everybody. We're talking about everybody on the active roster. This is as healthy as you could probably hope to be at this point in the season.
Well, that's very nice. And the other thing, I was looking at something, and I think 26% of snaps is the number of snaps Mozzie Smith has played this year. So we talked a lot about Cowboys. What are you getting? They got aggressive in the offseason. We talked about Brandon Cooks and Stephon Gilmore. We've done all that. Trayvon Diggs, the big injury of the first part of the year, clearly out for the year with the ACL. But if you look at their first three draft picks, which we kind of always focus in on, Mozzie Smith, 26% of his snaps, and that's what he's playing. He's playing 26% of the snaps. You'd like for that to be a little more, but I don't know what our Mozzie Smith expectations were going into the year. It definitely wasn't for him to be an all-pro, game-changing defensive tackle. It was to be a developmental piece that would help. Luke Schoonmaker, one catch. And then Overshown, of course, that injury has looked, it's hurt them, clearly, in the preseason when he tore his ACL. Boy, they're getting pretty much nothing out of their first three draft picks. And I compare and contrast that to, I hate to do it, the Eagles. You know, Jalen Carter, who they traded up for, and the number 9 pick in the draft. And some people thought he'd be the number 1 pick in the draft. But he's giving them something. Noah Smith is giving them a little bit. Not a lot yet, but he's giving them a little bit. And you see things like that, and you go, ugh. Now, it's not like every team. The 49ers didn't even have a pick till the third round. So, you know, we can have the same conversation about them. It's way different. But the Cowboys not getting anything out of their first three picks is a little frustrating. And it does, I don't know how much it affects the trajectory of things, but it's definitely something I feel like you're always counting on every year is some one or two of those guys contributing and even starting and helping, you know?
Yeah. The one thing I will say, though, is that this has kind of been the case with the Cowboys. Usually when they have, you know, the top 20 pick in the first round, that's usually when you get some pretty big returns on investment. Whether we talk about, you go back to Tyron Smith in 2011, talk about Travis Frederick in 13, Zach Martin in 14. You know, Zeke in 16. But then you go back to like 2017, they picked 28th, Taco. You know, they, yeah. they 2019, they don't even have a first round pick, so they don't have a pick until Tristan Hill in the second round. Not great. Now you go to 2020, top 20 pick, CeeDee Lamb. You know, 2021, top, well, it should have been top 10, but they traded back two spots, Micah Parsons. 2022, 24th pick, Tyler Smith. That one obviously hit. But then you go to 2023, the 26th pick. And I bring that up just because the Eagles are obviously picking higher, so there's a little bit better chance of you hitting on someone that can make an immediate impact. You know, that my thing on that is, so if they don't take Mazi Smith there, they take Bergeron, the guard. Even if he was playing well, I don't know if he would... How much of an impact would it be? You know, would the running game all of a sudden be fixed and they're just, the offensive line looks great? I have my doubts about that. I really do. So just judging by where they were picked at or where they were picking, I don't know about that first round if you would have that instant impact player maybe as much as if they were picking, let's say, in the top 15. And going back to the Schoonmaker one, I just have to say I had my doubts when, you know, he started – rookie minicamp and OTAs. He was dealing with that plantar fasciitis, and I just had the feeling it was going to be kind of a little bit like Jalen Tolbert, where it's like, yeah, kind of starting behind there. Overshown had the chance to make the biggest impact. That's yeah. a big loss, especially with how thin they are at linebacker right now. Overshown had a chance to be a really big time playmaker for this defense that, you know, Dan Quinn probably was going to use in a variety of ways, and that could really be showing up right now, especially with Leighton out. So that's a big one. That was a big setback that I don't think was really felt to its magnitude when it happened in that preseason game.
Yeah, and you know, the thing about, we were really happy about Marquise Bell and spent a lot of time talking about him last week. We're happy against how he played against the Chargers. But until like we have more evidence, it did feel like Marquise Bell was almost like a week-to-week thing. If he gives you a good game, great. But none of us were sitting there just like locking him in as, well, there's our solution. You know, at that position, you know, it felt like it was almost a good matchup with Eckler, and it just kind of felt right. And who knows? Like, I hope he, I don't know, it wouldn't even be proving us wrong. It's just like, there's way more to show, and you know how these young players go. There's going to be lumps and things like that. It felt like Overshown was going to be that guy. Even on draft night, I was a little like, I don't really understand what they're doing there. And then once you saw how they were using him at camp and how good of a camp he was having, you were like, oh, okay, I get it now. But either way, look, it's a good team. Jerry had some quotes in his you know, interview on The Fan. I thought it was very funny, some of the quotes, when he said, we are upper echelon, but we don't belong on the field with San Francisco. I thought that was really funny to me, because it's kind of Jerry talking in a circle. But, you know, I don't know what the Eagles are either. I mean, we've seen the Eagles look great smoking the Dolphins the other night.
You know, one thing I want to say about them real quick, though, man. Go ahead and take a peek on what they got coming up. That is a tough schedule the Eagles got coming up, man. It is. If they were to run that with only, like, maybe one loss, hey, your hat's just got to be off to them. Because, you know, obviously the Cowboys, their schedule is pretty tough. But not, it's not on the same level as where the Eagles are. I mean, and when I say that, I'm counting obviously this game against Miami, which they made it look easier than it probably was. But you go to Washington. I'm not sitting here saying that Washington's great, but you're going to go on the road to Washington.
They're pissed off, according to Jonathan Allen.
Jonathan Allen made that very clear. Then you got the Cowboys. Following week, you go to play the Chiefs in Kansas City. Week after that, you play the Bills. Week after that, you play the Niners. Then you go play at the Cowboys again. Then you go play at the Seahawks. I mean, you're talking about Christmas Day. Let's see, you get the Giants at home, and then you get the Eagles the following week. I mean, they got a rough road coming up here. So if you're the Cowboys, you got to hope that you're going to get at least one of those two against them, and that maybe they slip up against somebody else. But that's the one part about the Eagles. As good as they looked against the Dolphins, they got a tough road ahead.
Yeah, no, that is probably the toughest 5-week gauntlet that the league has to offer this year.
Got to be.
And congratulations, Cowboys, for being a part of that. You know, the Cowboys' December gauntlet is tough. We've talked about that a few times. You know what's after? Did you mention after the fifth game of that gauntlet is the Cowboys? Because Cowboys, Chiefs, Bills, yep. And this, yeah, who knows about Seattle?
In Seattle.
I got no feeling on what Seattle is.
Yeah.
probably as good enough to make the playoffs, but I don't know.
As of right now, the odds makers have the Eagles as a 3-point favorite in that game against the Seahawks.
And then, I mean, for us, Seattle, Philadelphia, at Buffalo, at Miami, Detroit, weeks 13 through 17.
Yeah.
That's quite a gauntlet, too, so stack them up. Stack them up if you can. Rams are a interesting team. Even though they looked kind of bad against Pittsburgh the other night, and I know we all are all pretty confused about Pittsburgh. I think we tend to lean that Pittsburgh is bad. And for the Rams to not win that game kind of told you a little bit. The Rams obviously have so many depth issues, but you can't help but go, man, they can sling it around. Cooper Kupp kind of looks like Cooper Kupp. Puka Nacua has quickly become a household football name despite being a fifth-round pick out of BYU. They'll use Tutu Atwell here and there, a little less so since they got Cooper Kupp back. Tyler Higbee is a decent tight end that Matt Stafford knows where he's going to be at all times. And then they're wrangling in running backs off the street just to kind of get by there when Kieran Williams went down and they traded Cam Akers. I couldn't believe that they were like asking Daryl Henderson to come back. I mean, that's how things – Daryl Henderson and the Royce Freemans of the world, just these – eternal running back twos, and they're not too worried about it because they're not going to run the ball much. They're going to try to throw it, and I kind of got to respect how they've cobbled together a team despite, you know, blowing through their salary cap and figuring out a way to go, you know what, we made the go all in trade to get Matt Stafford and go win a Super Bowl, and we've made all those plays, we know we're paying for it now, but we're not just going to give up, we're going to try to be competitive. I kind of respect that out of them.
Yeah. I mean, next to Dak, if I had to rank like the quarterbacks I feel like I know the most in the NFL, Dak would be one just from covering the Cowboys his entire career. But right up there would be Stafford just from all of his time in Detroit. And I was always a person that didn't believe he was the issue in Detroit. And there was a somewhat of a split amongst people in Detroit about that. And so there was a lot of people like myself who were very happy to see him have the success he did with the Rams and is still having. With that being said, though, I will say this. He also takes some risks because he has the arm that he does. I think he's at 7 touchdowns and 6 interceptions this year. So if you're a Cowboys fan, I would say there will be opportunities there to take the ball away, one. Two, I feel pretty comfortable saying that he is the least mobile of the quarterbacks the Cowboys have faced so far.
Yeah.
So you should be able to get pressure on him. They sacked him 5 times last year. Micah Parsons had 2 of those. So, yes, if the offensive line for the Rams, which isn't great, plays well, then the Cowboys are in a lot of trouble. But if they don't, and I would expect a pretty fresh Cowboys pass rush coming off this bye, if they can get into Stafford, whether it mean hitting him, taking him down, or forcing him into some bad throws, there will be plenty of opportunities there. But if you let him sit back, I mean, he'll tear you up at those wide receivers. But that's the thing. You just got to get some steady pass rush on him, and I would be surprised if this Cowboys defense doesn't do that.
Yeah, the offense. Oh, go ahead, Saad. Oh, Saad. Saad's joining us now.
Yeah, just to build off of that point with John, I think it almost helps that you played Justin Herbert before this because, I mean, before Herbert, like, I mean, they didn't play a quarterback before that, right? I mean, it was Daniel Jones and, you know, Zach Wilson and whatever. And so, like, and Mac Jones and, you know, stuff like that. So I think, like, and I know Brock Purdy, good quarterback, but, you know, plays a little bit better situationally. I think Herbert is that guy. And I think Stafford is also that guy. And I think playing against him and we talked last week about, we talked before about Herbert missing those throws. I don't think Herbert just had a bad day and just can't throw the ball. I think the pass rush had something to do with that. It messes up your internal clock as a quarterback. And so I think, you know, if you can get pressure on Stafford, that's going to be super critical, super important. And I think the Cowboys can. But at the same time, Stafford, he's a little bit of a risk taker. It's always funny when you have these like elite arm talents. They're either really, really good and just like super special. And there's a very small air of that. I'm talking like the Patrick Mahomes type. But then for the most part, they do have some of that. Tony Romo was a gunslinger. Brett Favre is like the textbook gunslinger of like he can make every he thinks he can make every throw, and so he's going to make some really crazy ones, and then you know he's going to make some really good ones. So all that to say, I think you're set up well against Stafford in terms of like the tools to disrupt him a little bit, but he's elite, man, and he's still got it. And talking to Jayron Kearse today in the locker room, it was really because he played with Stafford in Detroit, and so and then he played against him in the division in with Minnesota, and so like just to hear him talk about Stafford, you could just see like you know he was pretty giddy about it in terms of just how highly he respects him and everything, and there's a reason for that.
I think one of the most surprising stats, and I don't know if this is actually a stat because it's an actual award, but is that Matthew Stafford has only been, this is a guy that was drafted, he was the number one overall pick in 2009, and he's only been to one Pro Bowl. So if he has that, if he has that same career that he's had and does it all with the Dallas Cowboys, he's probably been to five or six.
No, that's, there's no doubt. That's crazy. You thought it... Like, man, look, you had a bunch of write-ins in all of his time, and Rodgers, Breeze, who else am I missing there? All those years in the NFC, right?
Kind of, that's pretty much it, right?
Russell Wilson, I guess, you know, a lot. But now that's kind of just one. That's, it feels like it'd be more than that.
Yep, 2014.
You know, last week, Cooper Kupp, two catches with threw it at him seven times. I mean, the Rams did run the ball a lot, but the Steelers were basically playing a run funnel, and they shut down Cooper Kupp. And a lot of teams have been playing the Rams. They're like, choose your poison here. We just now got Cooper Kupp back. But once Cooper Kupp got back, then Puka Nacua's numbers went down just a little bit, and then Puka had a huge day last week because Steelers were locked in on Cooper Kupp quite a bit. Cooper Kupp does not have a situation in his career where he has back-to-back weeks of not producing. It happened once in 2020. Other than that, Cooper Kupp gets the ball. So that's kind of target number one for me this week, and maybe that's just how you do it, the way the Steelers did it. Make them run the ball, get pressure on Matt Stafford. These are all clear, generic things. But finding a way to keep Cooper Kupp in check makes me nervous, especially now that they do have a legit threat with him, now that the Van Jefferson routine is over. And, you know, we're actually have guys who can play a little bit out there. Cooper Kupp, it's an anomaly. He does not have back-to-back weeks of no production. So he's going to get his catches. I'm kind of banking on that on Sunday. Noon game Sunday, always an interesting thing. The Cowboys don't get a lot of noon games. We are a late-arriving crowd city. It's just what we are here. Get to the game, folks. We got a team in the World Series, I understand. And if you're up partying, just get a hotel room in Arlington on Saturday. No, no, watch at home if you want. And like whatever's going on there, figure it out. Because the late-arriving crowd thing, which does carry over to baseball too, and basketball, and side knows sometimes in hockey, although Stars fans, pretty good. Stars fans know when the puck drops. Let's go ahead and get out there at noon and make a difference early on. The Cowboy noon game is one of my biggest fears. The noon Cowboy home game with a sleepy crowd and the offense maybe not moving the ball because Josh Dobbs of the Cardinals has more passing yards than Dak Prescott at this point in the year. That worries me. Is that a fair concern?
Oh, my God, yes. Friday, World Series game in Arlington. Saturday, a World Series game in Arlington. And then Sunday, a noon start in Arlington. I could definitely see that. The one thing I'll say is this Cowboys team has been outstanding as of late at home. And coming off the bye, even if it starts out a little bit slow, I do expect them to play pretty well. That's the one big difference that I would say in terms of the starts with the 49ers and the Cardinals. You know, it's difficult for me to sit here and say that it's because it's this great home field advantage. I don't really have any bias or any reason to say otherwise, other than the fact that I've been covering the NFL since 2011, and I've been to almost every single other stadium, so I think I have an okay understanding of what a good crowd environment is. I also go to a lot of sporting events, and I don't think anybody that goes to a bunch of Cowboys games would ever sit there and say that, Oh yeah, these Cowboys games. This is just the craziest home environment. I don't know how the guys can operate out there. And so, yes, it would not surprise me if it does start out kind of a slow, sluggish noon game, sun coming in. Yeah, all of that. But with that being said, I still expect this Cowboys team coming off the bye to play pretty well.
Yeah, man, I certainly hope so. I've got maybe a nightmare game, and it might be 10 years ago now. Do you remember week 5, noon game, years ago?
The Marco Murray game? Rams? Murray? Huh?
Was that Sean Lee out, gets hurt in the game?
We were I don't remember 4-0. That. That's not it, for sure.
No, that was
the one when they were down 21-0?
Yeah.
Talking about St. Louis Rams?
Yes, that might have been St. Louis. Oh, my God, I'm getting old. Because that seems way more recent than it was, and that was a long-ass time ago.
Are you talking about the one where, like, Murray went for 250 yards? Because that's the one I remember, because it was a noon game, and it seemed pretty boring in it, and then all of a sudden DeMarco Murray just turned it into this, like, whoa, what am I watching right now? But that was, let me see, I got this, I'm looking it up. This was 2011, so this is my first year on the beat, and that was against the St. Louis Rams. Now, they had not won a game yet. Cowboys won that game 34-7. Okay, late October game, very similar. It was October 23rd. And DeMarco Murray, first quarter, 91-yard touchdown run. Just, I mean, totally set it up to where you're just like, oh, this could be St. Louis Rams quarterback A.J. Feely, St. Louis Rams running back Steven Jackson, and Cadillac Williams, okay?
Gosh. Okay, that was a long time ago.
DeMarco, 25 carries, 253, one touchdown. I just remember it. I will always remember because it was a noon game, and it just seemed like the most boring start, and you were like, who cares, whatever. The Cowboys were like, I think, 3-3, 3-2, whatever, and he just started going off, and I remember being like, well, that saves this game. It's certainly interesting now, but it made me think of that because there was like no major crowd involvement. It was just kind of going through the motions, you know?
Yeah, no. Well, hopefully that's handled up, and we'll just ride the Rangers wave of excitement, and then there's no issues, and everyone's partying Sunday, and you jump out to a big lead. Maybe you start to use an explosive offense that starts taking some shots down the field. I wonder what the offense – I mean, I want to parlay this a little bit into some Dak talk based on Steven and the Diane Rossini report that you might have seen here on The Athletic. Some Stevens comments that they're going to wait and get Dak done in the offseason, which we kind of knew. They weren't going to play, you know, next year with Dak's number at $60 million. I don't think anything could happen to change that, just looking at all the parameters of Dak's contract already. But maybe it could. I mean, there's some things about the offense. We've all talked about this a million times. Team's 4-2. Whatever happens with winning games. Dak's 21st in the league in passing yards. He's worse than Josh Dobbs in that category. He's barely ahead of Jordan Love in that category. Now, interceptions. Yeah, we have cut down on interceptions. But I want Dak to be in the same company as Josh Allen and Patrick Mahomes and Tua and Jalen Hurts when it comes to interceptions, too. Like, I think some of that goes with it. And I want him to be up there, and he's not. You know, those guys all have a few more interceptions than he does.
Well,
completion percentage is there. He's completing 70% of his passes, but they're making an accurate thing to do that. And I just go back to the Chargers game. I'm not being a dead horse here. I feel like the coach doesn't trust his quarterback.
Well, since you're saying that, I'm not trying to take it too far down a different road, but because they are playing the Rams, I think there's some commonalities here. What if Dak's situation is like Stafford's, where you don't really appreciate him until he's gone? And what if things got to a point where they did move on, much like the Lions did from Stafford, and he goes to another team and has much more success there? And then when I say much more success, I mean in terms of playoffs, not mean as in actual numbers. I've thought about that over the last year or so. And then with them playing the Rams, I've thought about it a little bit this week too, where I don't think playing quarterback for the Dallas Cowboys is for everybody. I think there's a lot of players that would struggle with the spotlight, and he does a great job with that. But there's also the more criticism that comes with it, and there's part of me that wonders if sometime when he's still in his prime, if both sides agree, because again, he has a no-trade clause in his current contract, that if both sides were to agree, hey, maybe it's better we just part ways, I could see a scenario where Dak goes to another team that's obviously, like the Rams were, ready to win, and all they were missing was that leader quarterback type. It just makes me wonder, like, how Cowboys fans would feel seeing him, because I'm going to tell you this, like, a lot of Lions fans were all about the Rams and Stafford winning it because there were so many people that backed Stafford and that whole thing. And I do think there'd be a lot of Cowboys fans that would feel the same way. I don't know how you guys feel about that.
I think for me...
No, go ahead, Zod.
Okay. I think for me with Dak and Stafford, though, it's two kind of different things where I feel like Stafford with Detroit and John, and unfortunately, you know, this history of the Lions, where it just seems like that's always where talent goes to die. And, like, you know, Calvin Johnson and Barry Sanders obviously kind of highlight that. But then, so I think Lions fans, like, you always have this, like, this is just what happens. And, like, you know, you have to go. And now it's kind of nice that Stafford went to another team, because now you have two teams to root for, and it's great. I don't think, like, Dak goes to another team and all of a sudden a bunch of Cowboys fans become, you know, Colts fans. Like, I don't think that happens. Like, I think like there's still a very different line in the sand where the Cowboys fans, like, they might be happy for Dak if he does well or something, but I don't think you're going to have this, like, contingent of Cowboys fans who now become fans of whatever team he goes to.
Okay, so there's levels to this. I don't think there's any Lions fans that all of a sudden were like, I'm done with the Lions, I'm now Rams fan for rest of my life. That's not happening with them either, and that would not happen with Dak. But in terms of the way that they were fans for their playoff run with the Rams, well, I disagree with you big time. There's a lot of Cowboys fans out there that can't stand Jerry Jones, think he doesn't know what he's doing, and would like to see Dak Prescott have a lot of success. And again, with a Cowboys fan base, there will be a lot of fans, I feel like, that would be like that. Would that be the majority? No, it also wasn't the Lions majority, but there were a lot of people that were like, I really like this guy. I felt like that, you know, that, hey, he was, again, there's different levels to this, but I do see Cowboys fans that are just kind of like so tired of the same thing over and over again, not winning, not going deep in the playoffs, that there'd be a part of them that would be like, hey, I'm happy that he gets to win. He was always a good dude. He handled everything the right way. I'm glad he has this success. It just shows that this organization is just flawed. And again, there's two different levels to it with, like, Lions and Cowboys, but there is definitely some similarities there.
Yeah, I think there's some similarities, and I think they'd be happy for Dak, but I still don't see like this, like rooting. Like, I think with the Lions, there's this, even, I mean, now they're turning the corner, but I think there's always been, like, this sense of, like, apathy of, like, okay, the season goes until December, and then after that we'll turn to, you know, rooting for Stafford. I think like,
where do you think Cowboys fans think the season goes to? Do you think it goes to February?
Oh, absolutely. Not February. I think they absolutely always have hopes of January and stuff like that. Whether it does or not is different. I'm saying the expectation is always that this is going, like, they need to win in the playoffs. They need to do that.
Right.
That's not the expectation with, like, you know, a team like the Lions in any sport.
The way this season is going, granted, a new offensive system, sort of. We should give a little bit of patience to McCarthy, all right? They got a bye week, get a little time to figure this out, but I'm not going to say much more time. You need to have this ready and locked and loaded after stacking up some wins against bad teams. You need to have the offense playing considerably at a higher and more efficient pace than they have been. Kent sent us this tweet I'm going to read, and I've got a couple other stats about Dak. This is from Dan Rogers, Danny Phantom 24, in the Cowboy blogosphere. Good dude. The Cowboys are averaging just 5 yards per play this season, the second lowest efficiency over the last 20 years, even worse than any of the seasons where they lost Romo or Dak for the year. Now, I've got a couple other Dak stats. I've already mentioned 21st in passing yards. Yards per completion, okay? Just passing yards, yards gained per each completion. 25th in the league. Hanging out in Zach Wilson territory, okay? Yards per attempt. Dak is 22nd? No, I'm sorry, 19th right there. Hanging out in Kenny Pickett territory, in Sam Howell territory. And, you know, worse than Desmond Ridder when it comes to that. Meanwhile, you go to do some of the things that McCarthy wanted to do, though. Ball control, interceptions down, Dak at 4 interceptions, you know, and a lot of those kind of came at once. You know, that's your leading interception guy in the NFL is Jalen Hurts. You know, Josh Allen is second. Tua and Pat Mahomes with 6, you know, third, tied for third. You know, Matt Stafford in that box. He's way down there when it comes to interceptions. Completion percentage, Dak, top 5, nearly 70%. It's very clear. This offense is not being aggressive enough. The downfield passing has not been aggressive enough. And that has led to, God, I can't believe I'm saying this, Linehan-era offensive complaints about the surface level that a defense has to cover being trimmed down. You know what else that helps you do? It helps you stop the run. And they've got a bit of a point of attack problem on the offensive line in the run game right now. And maybe that could open up things deeper down the field. Right now, the Cowboys offense, you don't have to cover a lot of field. And I don't know if that changes because I kind of think this is what McCarthy wants. And I guess my point is what you guys are saying about what Cowboys fans think, if it's losing this way or not getting to your desired goal because of offensive struggles at the end of the day, again, doing it this way is way worse than when you're leading the league in some of the counting number stats.
It is.
Doing it this way looks way worse on Dak.
Oh, it looks way worse, but I can also sit there and say that there's nothing that's happened so far that to me makes me think it's any different than the last 2 years. They started out 4-2 last year. I think they started out, 2 years before that. They started out, I want to say, they were better in 4-2. They might have been 5-1. And yeah, and then they got to 6-1. And then before you knew it, they were 7-4. So the one thing I'm trying to say here is that we can't sit there and make these big, like, sweeping takes on this because it could be going down the exact same road where, yes, the numbers won't be as good, but they could end up with 11 wins in the playoffs. And what will really judge this offense is it in a level where it gives you a better chance to win in January? As I would say here right now, I would say it probably doesn't. But if you told me that, nope, it's the same exact thing, they win 11 games, lose in the divisional round, who would be surprised by that?
No one. Yeah. I would hope no one.
There's always, it seems like though the past 3 years, John, it's always been, man, Dak's the MVP, maybe in the MVP conversation this year, the first 6 weeks. And then they fall off a cliff after the bye week. It hasn't been like that this year. It just doesn't feel like Dak's level of play has turned any heads.
Well, this has probably been the biggest change.
This is going to be a prove-it year for him.
Right, but this is the biggest adjustment offensively that he's probably made in his career since maybe he was a rookie. I mean, every year up until this was building something off of Linehan, Kellen. I mean, there was some, you know, moving forward. This has probably been the biggest adjustment. So I think that if anybody expected it just to be a build on what he's done in the past statistically, you're probably asking for too much just because, yes, his numbers look much more conservative, but also the way the offense is being called is clearly much more conservative.
Yeah, and that's the thing. It's like when it feels on purpose.
Well, then why do that? Why get rid of Kellen Moore? Why would you want an offense that's purposefully worse?
I guess Kellen didn't look great the other night either, though. So.
He said it out loud. I mean, told you what it was.
Yeah. I mean, Kellen scores too many points.
Mike said that he wanted to light up Kellen wanted to light up the scoreboard. He wanted to run the ball and protect his defense, and he wasn't lying. We have 6 games to show us that that's exactly what he wanted to do.
Yeah, even the scoreboard operator at SoFi Stadium was like, you really don't want to take a timeout? And then, you know, and McCarthy did an interview where he basically said, it doesn't matter what you think. If we win the game, then I made the right decision. And I got to say, I disagree with that so much.
Yep, I heard that as well.
But you know what? And this is where I think that's just McCarthy being McCarthy, though. And I don't think there's any bit to it. That's just who he is. Like, he's going to say things like that sometimes that just make you want to pull your hair out if you're a fan. It's not him playing with the media, though. It's not him doing a bit, I don't think at all.
Let me ask you this real quick. As somebody that you know him well, if I gave you the two options, though, I'm interested to hear which one that you would take. Start the season, Mike. You can call the plays, and it ends up with a very similar season. The last two fall short. Jerry moves on, new head coach, whatever. Or would you rather it no, we're going to move on from Cal and hire a new OC, and they keep going down this path for 3-4 more years, continuing with Mike as head coach.
No, we had to have the clarity, right?
That's what I'm saying. Like, you're going to get some finality out of this where it, you're going to find out one way or the other. You know, it's funny because Mike pointed out about, I'm sorry, not Mike. I retract that. Mike never said that. When I talked to Tim Jenkins, a quarterback coach who had worked with Brian Schottenheimer and he specializes in the West Coast, he talked about how the West Coast will show you what you have in your quarterback. And it's kind of it's a good way to understand and know what you have for the future and where your quarterback's at. Well, I think Mike calling the plays allows you to know for sure if you're Jerry Jones, is this the direction you want to keep going? And you're going to get all your answers this season. You're going to find that out. So that's the part of it that you have to factor in, as opposed to the whole like, well, I don't know, let's do this for 2 or 3 more years. I think that you're going to know at the end of this year if this is the direction you want to keep going or if you want to go in a different one.
And Dak and McCarthy are the guys who carry the load of the blame, or it's just the load of the discourse is about those guys. What's the offense look like if he wants to run the damn ball? Okay, well, Tony Pollard has got the 11th most carries for running backs in the NFL. And you look at yards per attempt, though, it's down there like 26th in the league, 25th, 26th. I was looking at it earlier. Like Tony Pollard,
I wouldn't really have a problem. I'm honest, and I know I'm going to sound like an old school, like outdated, you know, football fan type here, but I really don't have a problem with him saying that. If it was 2014's offensive line with DeMarco Murray,
yeah,
2016 with Zeke, you know what I'm saying? Like, or let's say you're that, you know, that Tennessee team with Derrick Henry, you know, some of those years and stuff like that. I know it sounds old and outdated and terrible, and it doesn't fit the analytics, but with the way their defense is, I don't really have a major issue with it. The issue comes in, you look at this offensive line, you can barely ever keep the same group on the field together. You really are taking a leap that you think Tony Pollard for the first time in his career can be the lead dog. So there's just a lot more questions there as opposed to in, let's say, 2014, 2016.
Oh, Wayne, also, if you want to play that way, you better be one of the most disciplined offenses in football.
Good point.
Not one of the most penalized teams.
Yep.
And because if you're going to play that way and you want to play kind of that perfect brand of football right there, then you can't get a holding penalty that ruins a drive.
Yep.
And you don't trust that for a second here. So, like, you know, running game, though, if that ticks up and performs better, and we get, you know, Tony Pollard up to 4.5 yards a carry rather than 3.9 yards a carry, little things like that, play it more efficiently there, then now, you know, maybe that allows the offense to do some more stuff. But, you know, I don't know, man. The Rams, the Eagles, two good, decent defenses. I don't think it's as simple as you get a bye week and you can kind of retool the offense and change things up. I mean, they're going to win a lot of games by scoring 21 points. And that's tough to do. Tough to do all the way across the board. But maybe it works.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Mm-hmm. John, I loved your piece that you wrote over in The Athletic about, I'm not going to spoil all of it because I want our listeners to go find it, but it's about Jerry's comments about the trade deadline. And, you know, it's Jerry talks around things, so you don't really ever know anything. They got aggressive in the offseason, but John, fascinating names you threw out there. Is guys who would fit the criteria of players that would, quote, help put you over the top. Yeah. And so I don't know, have you gotten a chance to look at this piece yet? Because you have. Okay. I was hoping maybe you hadn't. I didn't tell you that. I was hoping maybe you hadn't have so you could guess a few names, because a couple names on there. And I got all stricken with number two just because I know him, and I was having a talk with a friend of mine today who texted me this morning and was like, I would do anything for Davante Adams. How good is he? How much would you give up? And I was like, a lot. Because that's a good way to solve your offensive problems real quick, I think. Someone like that. And when you add that to what CeeDee Lamb already is. I mean, we have questions about Michael Gallup, questions about their usage of Brandon Cooks, but that might be, you know, ticking up. But if you were able to do something crazy.
My issue is that there hasn't been a time where Jerry, since at least I've covered a team, and certainly not recently, has made one of those huge moves where you just go, whoa, yeah, they're all in.
Amari Cooper?
During the season. That was must do this or season will not even matter.
Yeah.
That's not, oh, we're loaded for bear, let's go and add this on the top. No, that this team is much more talented than that team was in 2018. They had to make Amari Cooper trade, or that thing was just going to go, that ship was going down. But yes, yeah, you want to make Amari Cooper trade type thing on this year? Then yeah, that is one of those moves for sure. The reason why I say it is because a moment that always stands out with me in my time covering a team is 2014 draft, first round. You know, you're sitting there, Johnny Manziel's there, and you know, Steven talks Jerry into, no, we're going to go with Zach Martin. You know, that's a safer pick. You know, he projects to be, you know, an outstanding player. He'll make a bigger impact. We have questions about Johnny, yada, yada, yada. And then Jerry told him about how that was, the safe play. And he didn't get to where he was owning the Cowboys and having the success that the Cowboys had with him as the owner by making that, you know, safe play. And it's kind of like where this team is right now, where it just looks like it's the same thing as the last few years, a team that's good but not good enough to win it all, why wouldn't you make that type of a move right now? Why wouldn't you be aggressive? And if you listen to that radio interview that I broke down some of Jerry's quotes from, he talks out of both sides of his mouth, where he talks about how, like, well, I'm not, you know, you don't make the calls. You wait for a team to call you because you won't get a good deal if you're the one calling. That certainly sounds like you're not making any moves. But then he talks later in the interview about how this is the type of team that he would make a reach for. He would do a little bit extra to add somebody. And so that's what the names were that I included, were the ones like, oh, you'd make a move, like go a little bit above and beyond to try. Well, these are the names that go after one of these guys. They're on teams that either are bad or because of their contract situation, those guys could potentially be someone that those teams could potentially want to move. They won't be cheap, but those are the type of moves. You want to do something like that. It not only sends a message to your fan base that, no, we're all in on this season, but it significantly improves your team, improves your chances in a year where, let's be honest, one of those moves could be the difference of you making a deep playoff run in a wide open NFC. Why not do that? To be honest with you, if that happens and you swing and miss and the player doesn't pan out, it ends up being where you gave up too many picks or something like that, I really don't have time for anybody 3-4 years from now that goes, yeah, they messed up by doing that back in 2023. No, they were going all in for it. I'd like to see that. When's the last time that that's even happened with this organization? If that's what it is, go get somebody like this. Get somebody from this level.
Yeah, I think like those first five guys that you listed were obviously on that level. But to me, it was the next two guys that you listed where I'm like, okay, if you can go get Jalen Johnson from Chicago or Devin Bush from Seattle, to me, that's still an all-in move. Like, I still think, like, yeah, it's not the name power of Davante Adams or Aaron Donald or anything like that. But to me, that's not Jonathan Hankins. Like, that's a level above Jonathan Hankins. It might be a level below, the Amari Cooper, I guess, first round tag or whatever. But I think those are names that could be really interesting. And for me, Jalen Johnson is the really interesting one, because I think that's where you can use a very interesting upgrade, where now you have flat flexibility again with Deron Bland of whether you want to play him inside, outside, and things like that. So for me, like, I understand those five names at the top, but it was the next two names that were really intriguing.
Let me ask you this one, KT, real quick. Let's say they don't make a move for any of these players, but in the next whatever weeks, they sign Leonard Fournette and Dominican Sue. Would that do anything for you?
A flyer on Sue more than Fournette. I would say at this point. But yeah, I think it does send a bit of a message like it's go time.
Right.
Because who's
just trying to come up with ways that if they don't make a trade, how else would you be sending the message that, you know, not even sending, it's because I hate sending a message because that's just like, just go get somebody with a name and then we sent a message. I don't mean that. I mean like an actual move that like when it happens, you're just like, you don't even have to say anything. Everyone knows. Oh no, these guys are for real. They're making a run at this thing.
Well, you
and honestly, if I felt that way a little bit in March when they did the trade for Gilmore and they did the trade for Cooks. Now what's happened since then? You've lost Leighton Vander Esch. You lost Overshown. Like, as you mentioned earlier in the show, you're not getting that rookie production that you were hoping for. You obviously lose Trayvon Diggs. So you need something else to kind of maybe ratchet it back up. You're 4-2. You're probably not as good as you thought you were to start the season. I just feel like something's missing than to just go, no. Let's just let this season play out with this crew.
And this is going to sound crazy, but like it matches a couple of things. Because you're also looking at where are things going around the league, where are other team situations as well. With trades, it's not just looking at yourself. We've always talked about that. Amari Cooper doesn't happen. If the Raiders were in it that year, then Amari Cooper stays with them. And they're not really not interested in your first-round draft pick. So there's a lot of things going on there. A name that you included on the list, and that's the last name I'll give off of the list of players.
Oh, you can name them all. It don't matter.
No, I want people to go click it up.
I have a name that might not even be on the list, but go ahead, KT.
I want to, because you mentioned a big running back, Derrick Henry.
That's what I was going to say. Available. Derrick Henry.
Because, especially if it goes bad with Levis this week, who they're going to start. If it goes bad with him and Malik Willis still, it does feel like they, I mean, he already gets out snapped by Tajay Spears. Like, they're already having a hard time getting him on the field. That's one where I just kind of look at it and go, paying for running back, I don't like doing. Interesting name, though, that can kind of change and fits what it sounds like your coach wants to do with a power running game a little more. Fits that mold a little bit. It might not cost you much.
And by the way, and also puts Tony Pollard back in a role where he can be better as well.
And this also, like, when it comes to on a chart of biggest name to least value, or at least that you would have to give up, far and away, he would be the guy at the top of that list because I don't think it's going to take a ton. I think Tennessee, with all due respect, wants to give him a chance to maybe go glom on to someone who's got a better chance than they do. Been a lot of buzz out of Tennessee that they're like, would take anything almost. Not a seventh, of course, but would take anything reasonable to go ahead and move on and let Derrick Henry, you know, go chase his dreams somewhere else. Something there to that, which, God, crazy if you go back to the days of Jalen Ramsey and Derrick Henry discussions, you know. Well, look at us all age together gracefully covering the same team and still feel like we're solving the same issues. It's quite the fabulous disaster when you think about it.
I'm just over here running on a
they did get Derek.
I'm just running on a hamster wheel over here.
No. Well, what's the fan base reaction to give him is it a third? Is it a fourth?
I can't imagine them giving up more than a third.
Would you do it?
Me? Yes.
I mean, I got to know how the coach is going to use him.
Well, think about how defenses are going to have to scout the Cowboys now. If they have Derrick Henry, I feel like that completely changes. Like, oh, now we got to stop this guy. It's just feels like it's going to be an impactful move.
They gave up a fourth for Trey Lance.
Right.
Yeah. Who might never see the field.
It's got to be a third then. I mean,
I literally can sit down in a meeting right now with them breaking it down, the entire scouting staff, the entire front office, explaining to me all the risk of it not working out and how this will affect you in the draft because you won't have this pick. And I'm still like, yeah, cool. I've seen the last 27 years. I've seen the last 10 years. Like, get me out of this hamster wheel.
Yeah, I'm kind of over here. Go ahead, son.
Oh, I also just think the fact that Derrick Henry's contract situation works really well, too. He's on an expiring deal. That's what you want for your running back as well. Like, you don't have any sort of long-term commitment to him. Now, you're going to have to you're going to enter next year with Deuce Vaughn as your starting running back. So you got to figure something else out there. But for this year, going all in on this year, that Derrick Henry, Tony Pollard tandem would look pretty good.
And also with the Deuce Vaughn thing, running backs are just so devalued that, of course, I can't sit here today and tell you what guy won't be on a roster, but there will be veterans available that can get the job done. There will be guys out there that you'd be like, oh, I can't believe so-and-so was out there for this price or whatever. Like, running back value is so low that it is not like they're going to sit there and be like, oh, there just was nobody out there, so here we are with Deuce Vaughn and then somebody we drafted in the sixth round. Like, and who knows? I mean, heck, even some of these teams are showing you can find a guy in the sixth round that could be your starter. But running back is just a position I just do not worry about finding, you know. Do I think I'm going to get another Tony Pollard or Derrick Henry if you were to make that move, or a Zeke or a DeMarco Murray? No, but somebody that would at least be starter level that I feel good about. Yeah, I think that you'll always be able to find guys like that. And again, I'm willing to risk the fact of that next year might be not as good. I might not be as talented. I'm trying to go all in on this crew.
Am I breaking my rule of, don't trade premium draft picks, unless you're getting something for like a premium position or going all in for a quarterback or something like that? I'm sitting here going, no, you can't give up a second rounder. And then I'm like, man, I just told you earlier in the show that Schoonmaker has one pick and the Cowboys have gotten nothing out of the first three draft picks this year.
Well, so it's
what am I fighting for here? I don't even know.
I'm going to tell you this right now. If you're trying to make an argument on them second round picks, that list does not stop with Schoonmaker and the Cowboys. If you start rattling off what they've done in the second round, all you're going to do is talk yourself into making this move. I'll tell you that right now.
Man. Well,
for every one Trayvon Diggs, I'm not going to get into it. Sorry.
No, yeah. It just never stops, it seems. Let's go ahead and make our picks. Let's go ahead and get our picks going right here. Standings wise, me and Saad 4-2, Kent and John 5-1 on the year.
Whoa. So,
I guess me and Saad have to start it off. I'll go first. Dallas 23-17. Gonna need the defense to get a stop there. Stop the Rams from scoring a touchdown on that final drive. Good line, I think, on this game. 6.5. Feel good about that. Let's say 23-17, including a 3-for-3 day from Brandon Aubrey once again.
Nice. I'm gonna go pretty close game all the way through, wire to wire, and I think it'll be Cowboys 24, Rams 20.
All right, kind of in the same mold. Let's go over to Kent.
Yeah, Rams don't have Kyren Williams, too, who is a big piece of their offensive success, kind of early part of the season, running game and blocking, too. So look for the Cowboys to take advantage of that and really get to Matt Stafford. So I'm going Cowboys 17, Rams 11.
Oh, my God, we would be talking so much about the offense.
By the way, can we also just say, like, unfortunately, Brett Maher, no reunion. No.
Yeah,
missed it by a week.
Bummed, and he was wronged. The offense should have got him closer. 53-yard miss and a 51-yard miss, and then a missed extra point, and they lose by 7. So they went ahead and said, you know what?
Who would have seen that coming? Would have been nice. I mean, who in L.A. could have seen that Brett Maher cannot be relied on?
We haven't seen the last of him, Kent. There is a USFL job for him coming.
/ XFL.
No. John?
I'm going to go 27-24 Cowboys. Oh. Key Stafford interception late seals it for the Cowboys.
Okay. Someone has seen too much.
Too much. He's seen too much.
Amazing.
Just think of that last series and at 24 playoffs, man. DeMarcus Lawrence causes that fumble, but then they're not able to recover it. And then a few plays later, causes another one, recovers it.
Let me just
Stafford had a chance to get the Lions their first play. I mean, the Lions should have won that game. And Stafford, that was a rough one there. His lone Pro Bowl season, I just learned.
I'll be quick here, but you were talking earlier about, you know, fan bases. Realize, you know, once they're gone, you kind of miss them. As a guy who is a lifelong Packers fan, covers the Cowboys and does want the Cowboys to win every week. But boy, I miss Aaron Rodgers, and there are Saints fans that miss Drew Brees, and there are Raiders fans that miss Derek Carr. Boy, the chain The chain goes on throughout the league. I mean, their Raiders fans go, this Garoppolo guy sucks. Give me Derek Carr. Their Saints fans go, this Derek Carr guy sucks. Ah, Mr. Breeze, those were the glory days.
Who doesn't complain about their quarterback?
All of us, we do. It's what we do.
I mean, who doesn't? I mean, what is there, four teams?
Oh, Buffalo's butthurt about Josh Allen.
That's what I'm saying. He's literally the person I was thinking of when I said that. Like, who doesn't complain about their quarterback? I'm thinking of immediately Burrow jumped out to me, and obviously Mahomes.
Yeah.
Can you just imagine? Hey, seriously. I've never heard anybody talk about this, so I just want to mention it real quick. There has to be at least one person at like a Kansas City tailgate that every once in a while complains about Mahomes. That has got to be the most fascinating thing ever.
This offense doesn't have it anymore.
Yeah, just gets there at 6 a.m., just grilling, barbecuing, and just complaining about how Mahomes is being too risky with the ball or something like that. It has to. And there's probably more than
commercials.
One. Yeah, exactly.
Too many State Farm commercials. They're hanging out with Taylor Swift too much. It's probably, yeah. Well, all right, guys.
Just imagine that to be your problem. Like, you're that guy. That's what you have to complain about on Sunday. You're just like, I just don't know about Mahomes right now. He's kind of bothering me. Imagine being in that. Just what a great life that sounds like.
A sad existence, John.
Taylor Swift apparently is going to make like $4 or $5 billion on this Eras tour. Should she just buy the Chiefs? Buy the Hunts out of it.
Such a legacy ownership. Maybe.
Stay in that suite.
Fun fact that our audience may or may not care about: the brother of Chiefs defensive tackle Kalen Saunders is one of Taylor Swift's backup dancers. Did y'all know that?
Huh.
You can see him in the Eras tour movie showing at an Alamo Draft House near you.
Why do you know that? I know you were going to go see the new Scorsese tonight, but you should go see the Eras tour, the movie, instead.
It's great.
Report back next week.
It's good, dude. They could have trimmed off about an hour and a half.
I know, KT. I'm talking to John here, though. John, you should go see it and report back.
How dare you?
I wish I could give John a director's cut if I was the director of the Eras tour movie. And it's like, here's an hour of the best stuff from it, because that's how
I'm not saying that I wouldn't watch it. I'm just saying I'm not watching it over.
You should go to the theater. Movie. Join in on the sing along, maybe some aisle dancing. Shake it off, John.
I'm not saying that. I'm not speaking poorly about her. I'm just saying that there's no chance that I would go see that over Killers of the Flower Moon.
Well, I think we could all agree. Let's go ahead and cut off 30 minutes to an hour over all of these long movies.
How long is the Taylor Swift one?
2 hours and 50 minutes.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. But that's probably how long, her concerts are that long, right?
I got a warning for using my phone, and I was like, there are people dancing up there. How can I not look at my phone? I was so confused. It was a weird deal. All right, well, guys, we'll catch up maybe next Monday might be the plan, as we do on-air producing here at the end of the podcast. Hope you all enjoy Cowboys-Rams, and if we do it Monday before Monday Night Football and World Series Game 3, what? All four of our local teams are firing away, so make sure you're following Sod, covering Cowboys and the Stars for us on The Athletic. John got you covered on the Cowboys. We got to get you covering the Rangers. Tim Cato covering the Mavs. Season opener tonight, Wemby Mania, and we see if this Luka Kyrie project works after only playing 6 minutes and 51 seconds together in the preseason, and Luka coming in with a bit of a calf injury. I'm so scared of what the Mavericks may not be this year. Enjoy Cowboys Rams. We'll get you geared up for that and get you ready for Eagles week on the next edition of About Them Cowboys. Bye.
Well, I'd the secret sauce.